We're spending the weekend here thinking about God's creativity and thinking about our human creativity and inventiveness as image bearers of God. And what I want to talk about is an invention, a creative invention that portrays a part of God's creation in order to help us understand it and perceive it. And it has to do with the representation of the solar system. But an underlying theme is the real solar system. And so I'm going to start with the real solar system. So Sally and Linus are sitting under a tree on a nice summer day. And Sally says, "Some morning, I'm going to get up real early and watch the sunrise." And in the next frame, Linus, a smart aleck kid, says, "Actually, as you probably know, the sun doesn't rise, the earth turns." And then they chew on that for a minute. And then Sally says, "Some morning I'm going to get up real early and watch the earth turn." Okay, well, I don't know. Have you ever done that? Have you ever gotten up real early to watch the earth turn? No, me neither. And Isaac Newton said that that's not the way the world really is. We perceive it that way because we're on the inside and it's happening all around us. But we have to change our point of view in order to see what's really happening. And he told us what's really there is the sun is sort of in the center of this part of the universe. And the planets are zipping around the sun, sometimes a little slower, sometimes a little faster. And they're spinning and they're just merrily going along. And that their solar system is running like a well-oiled machine. And it's humming along. A machine, yes, sir. And some people started thinking, well, maybe I can make a machine. And I can make a machine that mimics the solar system and it does what the solar system is doing and really doing. And maybe I can make it my size and put it in a box so I can look at it. And I can watch the planets going around the sun. And maybe I can watch the earth turn. And so there were some people who thought they'd like to try to do that. And one of the people who did was Wildrick Botchus. Sorry for the quality of the photograph. This is the best one I could find after 150 years. And he thought he'd like to make a machine like that. He was a watchmaker and a goldsmith in the far northeastern part of the Netherlands, a place called Groningen. And he had some evening time available. His shop wasn't open 24/7 like Walmart. And he had a wife and a home, but no kids, and so he had some time available. So he decided he would make this kind of machine as a hobby. And it took him 15 years to make it. And along the way, he got some ideas. After it was 15 years, it was running like he'd planned for it to run. And he thought, you know, I can make some improvements on that. So he started building a second one with his improvements in it. And he gave this first one to his nephew, Bochabos, who kept it running. He was also interested in astronomy. And Bochabos decided he was he started running it in 1868. So in 1896, Bochabos decided that he was going to emigrate to America. He settled in, and he took the machine with him, and he settled in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And that machine was kept running for at least some decades, and it got passed on through the generations of the Boss family. Eventually got down to Henry Boss, and Henry wasn't into astronomy so much. He had the machine sitting out in his carpentry shop, and his kids played with it, and his grandkids played with it, and pretty soon it wasn't running anymore. So in 1988, Henry and Bertha's children, some of their children, attended Calvin College, and some of their grandchildren did. So they sent a letter to Calvin College in 1988, and they said, "We'd like to give this antique miniature planetarium to Calvin College with the understanding that it be restored to operating condition and be put on display in the college." And so I was asked if I'd go to Kalamazoo and take a look at it, and I did, and I thought we should accept the gift. So that's how it came to be at Calvin College, and that's how I came to be involved in the whole process. So what does the machine look like? Well, it's in an octagonal box. It's about 38 inches across from side to side, And it has really four major sections of moving parts to display various aspects of the solar system. There are the planets going around the sun off on the right, and there's a dial that shows the day of the week, and a dial showing sunrise and sunset, and another part of the apparatus that shows the sun and the moon in an Earth-centered view going around the center along a calendar, and there's a globe. Not an Earth globe, that's a sky globe, has the stars painted on it, the major ones, as gold points. And you see the two bands of the Milky Way. And then there's a clock. And the clock is telling time in the ordinary way. Now, if you're going to have all those motions going on that you can see in this machine, there has to be a little bit of machinery that's going to drive it. So if you lift that platform up, and you can do that, down below is this whole system of gears and levers and eccentrics and springs. And the chronometer, the clock, is here, the rectangular structure here. And the entire apparatus is moved by the mainspring of that clock, and it's kept on time by the tick-tock escapement mechanism of the clock, and it runs. Okay, so we'll take a look at some of the details a little bit. Here's the planets that are going around the sun, seven of them, through Uranus, and there's Jupiter, and those are on wire bars that extend above the floor of the planetarium. There's Saturn with a little piece of wire around it to represent the rings. And those planets move around the sun. And if you're going to have the planets moving around the sun at the proper speed, you have to choose the proper gear ratios for the part of the apparatus that's going to run that. And so here's the chart that the maker had of gear ratios. And gear ratios here in the center are of the clock itself, and then a separate chain of gears for each of the planets. There's Mars, and there's Arda, and Uranus. And then some other gear ratios for other parts of the planetarium. He wanted to show a little bit more than just the planets. And so those are the gear ratios. That's as close as we could come to an owner's manual for this machine. So if you look down below the platform and you see the planets going around the sun here, you might notice there's a wire about half way up the glass panels that you can look through the side and see what's going on there. And that piece of wire goes all the way around. So how good do you suppose he did with his gear ratios? Well, for the inner planets, Earth and Venus and Mercury, the discrepancy between the planetarium and the real world is less than one part in a million. Okay, that's not too bad. Not quite so good for Saturn, 1 in 100,000. Worse still, maybe not so good for Uranus, all the way up to 1 in 1,000. So it'll be off by 26 days and 86 years. So we're probably going to have to get in there and do a little bit manual adjustment once every 30 years or so. And the planets go around the sun in something close to the same plane, but not exactly the same plane. And so we need a plane of reference, and we use the plane that the Earth goes around the sun, and we call it the plane of the ecliptic. That's our reference. And the orbits of the planets are at a small angle to that ecliptic plane. It's a little hard to see on this picture, but there's Saturn, and this is the gear that Saturn runs on. Sorry about the wiggle. I'm getting to be an old man. And you might notice that here in the far left, it's a little bit higher above the floor of the planetarium, and here it's a little bit lower. So sometimes those planets are north of the ecliptic plane in the real world, above the ecliptic plane in the planetarium. And if you, this wire that you see around here is the ecliptic plane. And it's about the same height above the floor as the little balls that represent the planets. So if you get your nose right down in the ecliptic plane and take a photo, you might see something like this, where here's Jupiter, and it's a little bit below the ecliptic plane, and there's Saturn, and it's a little bit above. And those inner planets look like they're pretty much too exactly in the ecliptic plane. And the inner planets move up and down, too, but the mechanism for that is below this brass floor of the apparatus, and you can't see it, so we're not going to talk about it. So here's the day of the week, 7 days of the week, and that moves the next day at the proper time. And that part is driven by this large brass gear on the floor of the apparatus. And that brass gear is divided into seven equal increments, one for each day, and it rotates clockwise once a week. And at the margin between days, there's a vertical pin that you see there. And as it rotates clockwise, that vertical pin engages this mechanism and turns this shaft around to the right out of the way. And that moves the needle to the next day of the week. And then after it gets passed, there's a spring that hangs onto that piece of the apparatus. And it after the pin passes it, then it flips back into position for the next day to come along. And then we'll look at the sun and the moon and the calendar. This is an Earth-centered view. And the sun is this gold-colored half-sphere. And looking from the north, from above, that goes counterclockwise, and it goes around once a year. And it goes through, passes through the constellations of the zodiac, whose symbols are painted along the side. And that gives us a calendar, and that's painted around the outside surface. And so here's June, there's July. So that's maybe May 20. And you can't tell a specific date very well on this machine, and so you better keep your BlackBerry so you don't miss your dental appointment. And the moon also goes around the circle, but it goes around and it passes the sun at new moon once a month. And the moon's orbit lies at an angle of 5.2 degrees. To the ecliptic plane, and so when it passes the sun, much of the time it's north of the ecliptic plane, south of the ecliptic plane, and it doesn't get in the way of the sunlight at all. But the points where the moon's orbit passes through the ecliptic plane are indicated by this pointer with those funny U-shaped symbols on the ends. Those are called the nodes. And so if the sun happens to be close to one of the nodes, when the moon comes by at new moon, it gets in the way between the sun and the earth, and we have a sun eclipse. And if the sun happens to be near one of the nodes, when the moon is at full moon on the opposite side, the earth gets in the way between the sun and the moon, and we have a moon eclipse. And if you follow those kinds of things a little bit, you know that the eclipses don't occur in the same month of the year, year after year. But in successive years, it gets earlier and earlier in the year. And that happens because the moon's orbit precesses. And it precesses clockwise, and the line of nodes also rotates clockwise on the machine, just like in the real world, and it goes around one cycle in about 19 years. And this other pointer is perigee when the moon is closest to the Earth, and apogee when it's farthest away, and that doesn't stay the same all the time either. That rotates clockwise in a cycle of about 9 years. And so that depicts that part of the solar system for us. So we'll go back to sunrise and sunset. This photo was taken in the summer. Sunrise over here, more than 12 hours of sunlight in the day, sunset over there. It would be straight across at the equinox. Okay. And the equipment for that has to be associated with the sun going around the center of that Earth-centered view. And so that gear is down here in this stack of gears. And there's an eccentric that's attached to that gear. And this steel lever that you see here, this end rides on that eccentric. And the pivot point is right there. And so this end moves back and forth this way and this way. And that moves the needles of sunrise and sunset. This picture taken in the wintertime, when from sunrise to sunset is less than 12 hours. And there's also an equation of time. The brass lever that you see here rides on a different eccentric associated with the sun. And it rotates this disk a little bit to the right or to the left. This needle is stationary. And so that tells us that when the sun is early, according to compared with our Earth clocks, and when it's late, and how much. And then we come to the globe that has the stars painted on it and the Milky Way. And it also has a rod carrying the sun and shows where the sun is relative to the stars. And the moon is down there on the right. It also shows where the moon is relative to the stars. And the rim of this metal band, the upper edge of this metal band that surrounds it, is our horizon. So the sun comes up over our horizon and rises high in the sky and then sets over there. The globe rotates once a day, going from the viewer's right to the viewer's left. And the moon rises and sets, and most of the stars rise and set, just like in the real world. And while all of that is happening, the sun is moving to the eastward, to the right in this view. And I forgot to show you where the equator is. There's the equator of the globe. And the angle at which it is lying in its cradle here was done for Groningen in the Netherlands. So it's not quite the same for Grand Rapids, but not terribly far off. And so the sun is moving along the ecliptic. It doesn't go by the equator. There's the ecliptic plane, this line at an angle. And so when this picture was taken, the sun was just a little bit past the summer solstice, and it's headed down toward the equator, which will be the fall equinox. And that happens on the machine just as it does in the real world. And the moon goes around also, moves to the east as the globe rotates. But it has its own plane, and so that's 5.2 degrees for the ecliptic. And sometimes it's above the ecliptic and sometimes below. And so the rod that the moon is attached to slides along an eccentric down here on the globe. And so it moves north and south of the ecliptic on the planetarium, just like it does in the real world. Now, all of that, that's some of the major features of the planetarium. And the entire mechanism is driven by the mainspring of this clock. The clock was manufactured in the U.S. by Chauncey Jerome Clockworks, and he was exporting clocks to Britain and Europe at the time that Wilderich Bacchus chose this clock for his planetarium. And so the entire mechanism is driven by the mainspring of the clock. The speed is regulated by a lever and a balance wheel mechanism. The mainspring is down here, the balance wheel there, and this is the end of the lever that oscillates back and forth when the clock is running. And about this time, I looked at this apparatus and I said, you know, the real solar system is humming along out there all by itself. This man-made machine is going to need a caretaker, because I can wind that clock up nice and snug and it'll run for about 40 hours. It's more than one day, but less than two. I was planning to do a little traveling in my retirement years. I'm going to have to wind that thing every day. And that's almost as bad as having a herd of dairy cows to take care of. And so I got my own inventive and creative juices running, and I got an electric motor, a gear motor with a shaft that turned at 2 RPM, and I attached that to the winding stem of the clock down below this platform where it wouldn't be seen by the observer. And I snuggled in a couple of micro switches. And I have the micro switch with a micro switch finger. Right here is one of them. Right there, one of them. And here's the other micro switch finger. And they ride along the outside whorl of that mainspring. So as the clock runs and the mainspring unwinds, it expands, and it turns those micro switches on, and they turn the electric motor on, and it winds the clock. And as it winds the clock, that mainspring shrinks back in toward the center, and the micro switches get turned off, and the electric motor stops running. And so it never gets wound up too tight, never winds up unwinds enough that it will stop. And I can go do my traveling after all. So if you're interested in coming, and so there's a micro switch one. So that's the story. So if you're interested in coming and to see what's going on there, you're welcome to come and visit us. If you want to watch very much happening, you better take your lunch and plan to stay a while. If you watch for 2 minutes, you can watch the minute hand of the clock move two spaces on the clock face. If you stay a week, you can watch that globe turn around 7 times. You can watch it go day of the week will advance. The moon will go about 1/4 of its way around the sun, and so on and so forth. If you want to watch Jupiter go around the sun once, man, that's going to take 12 years. So maybe you better come periodically and note the changes that happened since the time when you were there before. So that's the story. And there's more information. There's a website at Kelvin that's maintained by Larry Molnar, one of the astronomers. And there's a publication, actually. You probably have this journal on your desk. Okay. the Watch and Clock Bulletin, published by the National Association of Watch and Clock Collectors, and that's in starting on page 361 of the current issue, July-August of 2013, and it'll tell you a lot more about the clock than I had time to today, and some more about the planetarium. Thank you for listening. Good thing I like to tinker, because I said we should accept this gift, right? So guess who has to do the reconstruction? I didn't spend full time on it. Three-fourths of it was, I retired from full-time teaching in 1990. And three-fourths of it was running and ready to be put on display in 1992. And the donors were there, and some family members were there, and some people from the Alumni Association, and, you know, some proper press folk, and so on and so forth. We had a little dedication ceremony in the hallway where this is displayed. I did a rough calculation, and I thought maybe 6 months full-time equivalent.
Did you have to replace pieces?
I'm sorry?
Did you have to replace pieces?
I don't know if you noticed. It's on a wood platform. What happens to wood over time? It shrinks. I did a lot of hand filing of gears so that they would mesh. And there were a couple of gears that had gotten broken. The spring on the balance wheel was all twisted and deformed, and has been replaced since then. It still needs a little maintenance once in a while. And so I'm around much of the time, but I was in Florida for the winter 1 year. And I got an email that said, the planetarium stopped working. When are you going to be back in Grand Rapids? Nobody else will touch it. Yes?
Did it come with any documentation, or was it like the anti-kicker mechanism that you had to
use? I had to figure it all out by myself. I had it all apart. I grew up on a farm. My dad taught me, you know, if you're going to try to fix something, you better be very careful. You know, notice how it was put together when you take it apart so that you can put it back together. And that was very good advice. Yeah, I had it all apart. Yes?
Those kind of accuracies that you talked about when it's relatively few, even 100 or so notches in the gears. I mean, to come up with that kind of accuracy, are those...
Well, my conjecture. Okay. Well, my conjecture. The builder of the planetarium purchased the clock. Mm-hmm. I think he handmade everything else. Okay. So he can make the gears with whatever ratio he wanted, and he can make them come out close.
For the number of cogs in each of those years, to come up with that kind of accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah, and he did his planning very well. Yeah.
So maybe I missed some of this, but at the beginning you talked about the fellow who made this.
Yeah.
How much more do we know about his background and his motivation for doing this?
All of the characters in this story were Christian folk. Okay, I didn't talk very much about the faith contribution to this, but they're all Christian folk, including the builder. And but he was a watchmaker and goldsmith, and so he had some of the mechanical skills to do this. And his interest in astronomy. I don't know if you've heard about the Eisinger Planetarium, which is built in his house in the Netherlands. It's now a museum. The planets hang on rods from the ceiling in the living room, and there are dials on the wall that show various aspects. And the works, the mechanism is in this attic, and the biggest part of it is a huge oaken wheel with spokes on the end, and those spokes mesh with other wood gears with wood spokes, and that one's driven by weights, like a grandfather clock is driven by weights. That one's driven by weights in the wall, and of course you have to wind them up now and then. They keep it running. Okay, it's in Franeker. In the province of Friesland in the Netherlands. If you get there, it's an interesting stop. The second planetarium that this builder made is also in that museum, in a side room. Maybe a dozen of the miniature planetaria on display there. So that's about all I know. Okay, I know something about other members of the family. That's about all I know about him. Yes, sir. The lettering, I'm sure, that's in English, was done after it had come to the USA. And I don't know at which stage that was done. That was done before we got it in 1988. The original lettering was in Dutch, the days of the month and so forth. And the band of that metal band that goes around the globe, the sky globe, there are words of sunrise and sunset that have not been painted over, and they're in Dutch. So I'm sure that all of the original lettering was in Dutch.